Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, sponsored by cradiodifferently.com. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Robin Hicks.
This week,
Spotify and the new music model.
10. All Shire, all the time.
The Jersey Shore
ain't got nothing on this place.
You boys!
Mumbrella 360 opens for business.
ACP relaunches PC User as Tech Life and gets accused of nicking the name.
Box office domination for 21 Jump Street.
You're ready for a lifetime of being badasses.
Oh, I am.
I thought this job would have more car chases than explosions.
And Robin gets pranked by Fitzy and Whipper.
I did some work for the big issue as well. What did I write? Oh, just handing them out, not writing.
Also with us today in the slightly echoey studios at Mumbrella House, Mumbrella's Kathy McGinn. And Colin Delaney.
Hello.
Now, let's kick off today's Mumbrella Cast by talking about Spotify. Now, it's a music platform. It's already been very successful in the UK, in the US and Europe, due to launch in Australia soon. So, Kathy, talk us through Spotify, both as a music platform and a business model.
So it's a platform for streaming music, and it's really built around the idea that music's a very social act, or listening to it and sharing it. So it integrates with Facebook and Twitter, so you can make playlists, share them with your friends, listen to what your friends are listening to, and so on. The revenue model is both in terms of ad serving, so advertisers can place audio ads and banner ads on Spotify. Then also users can choose to opt out of ads by having a paid account, and there are a few different levels of paid account.
And the audio ads, will that tend to be just, you know, a media agency that's already done a buy on some radio stations may actually just choose to put those very same ads into the audio stream?
Yeah, I think that could happen, but the ads that tend to probably be more effective are ones that are created for the platform.
They don't autoplay, do they? As in, you don't go on the site and they start playing to you?
Yeah, that's actually the slightly irritating, I guess the reason that 3 million people have chosen to pay to not hear ads at all is
right.
That you're playing music and merrily listening to your favourite album and it gets interrupted by a commercial break.
But in between tracks rather than halfway through a track or something, presumably.
Yeah.
Do you think Australia will be a big market for it?
Well, I think Australia has a great kind of culture of making music for a while now. Australians love downloads. I think it's definitely ripe for the picking, although there's been a couple of other contenders emerging.
Well, before we talk about that, maybe just talk us through some of the personnel as well. So we're beginning to get the first pictures in the management. Kate Vale, you've had a conversation with?
Yeah, so she's a former Googler. She's now the MD of Spotify Australia. She's, you know, obviously, she says she's been a fan of the platform, which is why she was so happy to get the gig. And I think she's also very excited about its possibilities for advertisers. She uses an example from the UK, which is that what Spotify offers is also, as well as all the standard ways of targeting people based on demographic information, you can target them based on their music preferences. So she was talking about JAG in the UK targeting essentially middle-aged men listening to classical jazz as their core market.
What sort of advertisers in Australia do you think will have an appetite for Spotify?
I think it will probably be an interesting platform across the board.
Colin.
Yeah.
It's not the only platform.
No.
You're something of a muso yourself. What do you see as the other players in that space?
Yeah, so one of the platforms is Ardio, which is capital R-D-I-O, if you're looking for it. And it was started by the guys that started Skype. It's different as far as a revenue model goes because they're subscription only. So rather than offering that free option to place ads, you're just paying per month at a $9.99 per month rate. I have used Spotify back when I was living in the Netherlands, and it was really good. Having signed up for RDO, it follows a very similar style. You know that you can download the app to your computer and play it through there, and it's easy to share your music and there's a good quality. The first thing I did after reading Kathy's piece, she mentioned that the Black Keys weren't on Spotify. So the first thing I did was search for the Black Keys, and they're on RDO, which means that some record labels are signing up to this. You know, the big record labels are signing up to RDO, which sort of begs the question, you know, what's going to happen with Spotify? Is there going to be... how strong is the rivalry between the two going to be? Is one going to come in and wallop the other because they've got all the record labels signed up?
And another brand in the space is JB Hi-Fi, which seems a bit unexpected, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's a smart thing for them to do. It's what we're hearing Harvey Norman's going to do at the moment, isn't it? He's suddenly...
Because he loves the internet.
He loves the internet and the technology it provides. And so he's bit the bullet and decided... Jerry Harvey. And he's realised that maybe 10 years on, that's the place to be online rather than going against it. JB Hi-Fi have done the same thing. And so they've got a streaming platform as well. That was the platform I used first before RDO in Australia. I believe it launched first. It doesn't have an ad revenue model either. However, as far as I can tell, it has no mobile option like Spotify and RDO does. And it's a little bit cheaper. It's $8.33 a month or something.
The thing that I just wonder what I'm missing is, you know, this sounds terribly old school, but MySpace had a very good free music streaming service. Why? What was wrong with that?
Or Last.fm.
Yeah, but I think MySpace, what you couldn't do is you couldn't sort of mix and match the stuff you were listening to. You had to listen to one artist at a time.
Mm.
Whereas Spotify and RDO, you can sort of mix it up a little bit.
And also, I guess there is the ability for brands to insert advertising there.
Well, which, MySpace was covered in that.
But not in audio terms. You know, certainly I don't think I ever heard an audio ad on MySpace back when I was, you know, playing all my Billy Joel or whatever it would
be. and you could only sort of listen to four tracks at a time of whatever artist's page you were on before you had to go back from what you were doing, go back to MySpace, find a new artist and move on, whereas you can really build playlists and you can, you know, you can just let it play in the background.
What about the Pandora model, this thing where it tries to work out what you like and then plays you more things that sound a bit like them? Although, before it went away from Australia, I used to listen to it, but it gradually decided that the only thing I liked was the Ramones. So it was
nothing wrong with that.
Well, yeah, I have to say, Colin is the first person I've ever seen wearing a Ramones T-shirt, I think, may be able to name a song or two.
I think the thing about both Spotify and RDO, they do have that sort of discoverability that Pandora offered, but I think the fact is they bring in peer recommendation and there's a social component, so you're probably more likely to listen to stuff your friends like.
But my friends like really terrible stuff, though, I have to say.
My Billy Joel collection's pretty small.
And generally, the response by music publishers, do they love it or hate it, this genre of technology?
Well, I was reading an interview on the Music Network with the head of Universal in the UK, and he was behind Spotify in the UK. Obviously, the UK was the first place to get it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kathy.
Sweden, I think.
Sweden.
The founders of Sweden.
Thank you for correcting me if I was wrong. And but he was behind the model. However, Universal Australia were, I think, not behind it, which is odd considering it's one large company. So why wouldn't the head of the company tick the box for all the nations? But that's what slowed Spotify coming to Australia, is all the majors getting on board and saying, yes, we're up for it.
And that's the question about Spotify, why it actually hasn't launched yet, because we're expecting it to launch about now. We think it may still be some licensing issues, but we're not quite sure.
Yeah, I think that's Kate's answer, was that there were a number of very complex things they were trying to bring together, but I think what she actually was trying to say was that it's just down to negotiation with labels.
Next, 10, the Shire Network.
There's more to radio than music for your headphones.
Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves.
Check out the case study for Nissan Micro Citizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city.
Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done.
See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
Network 10 has had a big week. It's hired a CMO, it's looking to sell its outdoor advertising company, and it stirred up trouble by trying to bring the Jersey Shore to Sydney's beaches. Let's start with the appointment of Tony McMaster to Chief Marketing Officer. Tim, why is this a big deal? You wrote an opinion piece about this.
Yeah, look, I've not been able to understand, and I've asked people in media agencies who are far cleverer than me to explain it, and they've not been able to understand. Why are big commercial networks, and I'm thinking particularly 7, 9 and 10, don't have a really senior marketing role that goes into the board? Of course, they all have marketing functions within there. Some of them are, you know, some of them are very good, some of them aren't. But what there isn't, you know, is a big overall marketing plan about marketing the brand of the network, as opposed to some ads in the Sunday papers to promote whatever show is about to launch that day or on the Monday. You know, someone from an agency was making the point to me that if you can just either take a percentage share off your rivals just by building up your brand a bit, or even bring new people into watching TV who maybe wouldn't have been watching that night or that week otherwise, then that makes a difference of millions and millions of dollars, you know, because that's how big the TV market is. You know, it's you know, pretty much all of those networks. I think, you know, even 10 brings in about $1 billion in revenue a year. You know, obviously 7 and 9 significantly more than that. So it always seemed to be crazy, the fact they didn't have a chief marketing officer, you know, someone going right in at board level. So Tony McMaster, I don't remember him in his time at McDonald's, but he seems to have a good reputation from that time. So the big question now is, will he actually get a big budget to be a significant player? Because, you know, what almost seems to happen with the networks is they rely on just doing a bit of contra. You know, they do a deal in the back of a taxi and they'll swap some ads, and, you know, so every time you see their brand outside, they're not actually paying real money for it, or that's the perception. So, of course, it's not anything particularly strategic because they're just getting what they can for free. So we'll have to now see whether 10 actually puts a significant, genuine media spend into it, you know, which is a brave thing for a network to do when it's, you know, it's kind of, it's number three and struggling. But obviously, you know, under James Warburton, it's a kind of newly invigorated network as well. So I just think it's a really interesting thing.
Yeah, we've heard Chris Stevenson from Strategy Director at PhD, whose client is Nine Network, talk about this before on a podcast, where it's said that often channels rely on, as you said, tentpole marketing, I think they call it, where the brand prominence of an individual show will do the marketing for on the network's behalf. There's no real need for overall branding for a station.
Well, that's the perception. I'm not sure it's a correct perception, though. You know, but look at something like Seven. They put so much marketing effort into Revenge. You know, particularly over Christmas. You know, you just could not escape the promos for it. But also, you know, if you went to the cinemas, it was trailed everywhere, done really, really well. So that was an example of, I guess, tentpole marketing around a particular show, and it rated well. But I'm not sure if in the viewer's mind, in the consumer's mind, they necessarily, it shone onto the whole of Seven. You know, as must-see Revenge, it happens to be on Seven, rather than Seven. It's a network with really great shows, including Revenge. So a sort of subtle difference, but an important one, I think.
Yeah, and do look at SBS, of course. I was chatting to Jackie Riddell, the marketing director of SBS, yesterday, who took a bit of issue with your opinion piece in that you didn't mention SBS. Obviously, they spend quite a lot of money on marketing the 7 million stories and counting. That's overall umbrella.
I mean, I know they take ads, but I wouldn't see them as one of the main commercial players, purely because of the fact that they have an audience share of about 5%.
Yeah, and also, perhaps that proves that perhaps it doesn't work. Their audience
share is only 5%,
so perhaps it doesn't work.
I think that's probably the wrong conclusion to draw, or at least the correlation rather than causation.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. Arguably, though, there should be a greater potential share available, because you do see some great shows on SBS sometimes which have been under-promoted that don't find an audience.
I mean, rather than the halo effect of the individual show, do you think people are loyal to a network as a brand? I think that they're interested in content rather than...
Well, that's the question, because we talk about things like, you know, Colin, you've talked about it in the past, you know, Nine, The One, Still The One was that big campaign, which I think there were some hints, even that was lifted from the US as a sort of, you know, kind of concept.
And that is the last big marketing campaign I can think of from a network. That said, I really like what 10 is doing with 11's sort of positioning at the moment. It's fun, it's playful, it's where The Simpsons are, and it's where, you know, their neighbours... and their Animation Tuesday.
But a lot of that is about on-air promos as opposed to genuinely... Of course, it's a smart thing to use your own media to promote yourself.
Yeah.
But, you know, real marketing is, well, what would you do if you didn't own a TV network? What are the things that you would, you know, do to promote yourself elsewhere?
So elsewhere, Ten could be considering selling its outdoor advertising arm, iCorp. In a statement, Ten said, in light of recent corporate activities within the Australian out-of-home industry, Ten is currently holding a strategic review and considering strategic options for I. There is no certainty that the strategic review will result in a transaction or that any transaction will be completed. The news follows after APN sold half of APN Outdoor. So, Tim, is it a good time to sell? I mean, you know, outdoors being is a growing medium. Why are companies selling outdoor?
I mean, a couple of things on this. Firstly, we hadn't reported it because we were checking it out, but I got pretty strong rumours that this was in the works a good 4 days before they made the announcement to the ASX, partly because you could see the share price going up, which is not good corporate practice when something's in the air and you haven't made a disclosure to the market. So I think they were slow making their disclosure to the market. But yeah, you know, we've seen this going on in outdoor. We've seen it with, you know, as you say, with APN selling half of APN Outdoor to effectively, you know, to a sort of a venture partner. We've seen the same thing go on with OO as well, with I think it was Champ Equity, wasn't
it? That's right,
yeah. So clearly there is an appetite from people to invest in outdoor, and I guess the question with Ten is, well, why would they be looking to get rid of one of their best performing parts? Because, you know, when the annual results come in each time, it's generally I is the bit that's going well, generally better than the TV arm.
Yeah.
Now it might just be that they think that for that reason they can get the price for it, but of course, you know, it's are you taking away some of your future play? And of course, you know, the other thing is the thinking for a network that actually you want a cross platform sell. And for that, you know, it actually is useful to have more than one media property. So I wonder what it says about the, you know, the strategy for Ten, whether it's going to become, you know, pure play TV.
Could it be perhaps freeing up some cash to make acquisitions? Warburton, new CEO, slightly depressed market, so assets will be cheaper to buy elsewhere, perhaps?
I mean, it's an interesting thought, isn't it? Because, of course, we've seen new investors over the last sort of few months, you know, most notably, I suppose, James Packer and, you know, Lachlan Murdoch, who now is the chairman, had been the acting CEO for some time. So they might, and of course we're also seeing, you know, we'll see very soon changes in the regulatory landscape. So there'll be changes in the rules about who can own what. So that's interesting. But, you know, there is a new rumour every month. You know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, the theory was that if the Foxtel OzStar merger didn't happen, then maybe Foxtel would buy Ten.
Yes.
You know, so there are definitely, you know, moves afoot. So it feels like, yeah, there might be something else behind this.
Yeah. And in slightly more salacious news for Ten, the network and production company Shine are coming under fire for attempting to turn the Sutherland Shire into Jersey Shore with the announcement of new show The Shire.
Nothing will prepare you for Ten's new series from the makers of The Only Way Is Essex.
I'm quite good at cheating.
Just the way they talk, like, they just don't sound very educated.
I want to become a porn star. I love when I talk too much. I punch him in the face, broke his nose.
Someone accidentally fell down the stairs, but I refused to say that I pushed her.
The Jersey Shore ain't got nothing on this place.
You, boys.
Colin, what can you tell us about God's country, Sutherland Shire?
Well, so The Shire is, as you mentioned, from production company Shine. Since the brouhaha has come up, they've backed away from the term, you know, Australia's Jersey Shore.
The brouhaha has been fun, though, hasn't it? Because what we've seen is a production company which is founded by a Murdoch creating a show for a network which is run by a Murdoch, and we're reading the brouhaha mainly in the tabloids owned by another Murdoch. So it is there's a pleasing circle of life going on in the brouhaha.
Do you think Lachlan will get a smaller Christmas gift or something like that?
Well, I just think it's all very mutually beneficial.
Yeah, and so now David Mott, head of programming for 10, was on the Kyle and Jackie O show, bantering with the mayor of Sutherland and saying that it was more about, now correct me, British people, which way to Essex? This way to Essex?
The only way is Essex.
The only way is Essex. The only way. Like M people.
Which isn't exactly that upmarket a show either.
No, it seems odd that he would choose that to defend the Shire.
Particularly as we've seen that leak, heard in that leaked clip, they actually mentioned Jersey Shore in the leaked clip. You know, that was something that was created in the network. So to try and back away from it now seems a little odd.
Yeah.
It's clear that in the clip they've not chosen Cronulla's finest to be representing the Shire.
Well, what's also...
What do you think the real Cronulla is then?
Dig up, stupid.
Pleasant suburb. I don't think it's full of idiots that want to be porn stars, and I think that's a very unfair reputation. Also, good surf.
What I would mention, though, is it is interesting because in the media and in the cultural world, what do we think of when we think of the Shire? We think of the Cronulla riots. We think of Bra Boys, who are from Maroubra, but I believe that falls into the Sutherland Shire. I would also like to point out, though, Australia's first reality TV show, Sylvania Waters, which went out on ABC in the early 90s, and it got panned, like, what has happened to television? What is this? And it was ABC leading the way with this, like, follow... You know, it was...
Was it Paul Watson who directed that?
I'm not sure. I was too young and a little tacker to follow. But it was basically this sort of family with, you know, first world problems, having a squabble. Very Australian, though.
Actually, what made me decide to move to Australia? Still with 10, the network came second in the ratings on Sunday, with the Australian Grand Prix taking 1.4 million viewers, with pre-race audience taking 900,000, ranking 10th for the night. However, it was the second Sunday of My Kitchen Rules which won. 10 since announced they've moved Young Talent Time, which was on at 6:30 on Sunday, to Friday to make room for The Biggest Loser in an effort to be a stronger lead for their Super Sunday. The move comes after weeks of disappointing ratings for Young Talent Time and stronger ratings for Biggest Loser. Tim, will it work, or will everyone just switch over to 7 for My Kitchen Rules at 7:30?
It's a bit of a juggernaut at the moment, 7, isn't it? I mean, we're seeing it every night. You know, it kind of... You wondered when My Kitchen Rules moved to Sunday whether actually that was going to be a stretch too much. But it's getting close to 2 million most nights. You know, it's hard to see anybody sort of damaging My Kitchen Rules until that series finishes. Young Talent Time on a Friday. This is probably quite cynical, but one of the things that I think will happen is even if it doesn't rate terribly well on a Friday, because mostly the press only writes about their rating stories Monday to Friday, and by the time you come in on a Monday, Friday night is a long time ago, it will be very much underreported if it does badly or if it does well. So it's in a safer slot where 10 won't get a weekly headline with Young Talent Time slips again. So I think that might be some of what's going on.
Is it a smart move in that they can bring in The Biggest Loser, which is obviously why they're doing it, a much better lead-in for their Super Sunday? But also, Friday night is... That's like stay up late night for the kids that watch Young Talent Time. I mean, is it a... Are broadcasters and media agencies, do they think about...
The children.
Do they think about the kids?
Well, not so much, because they're not great grocery buyers, so the advertisers don't tend to care too much.
Next, Mumbrella 360 launches.
After a big launch event last year, we've announced this year's Mumbrella 360. The event will be held at the Hilton Hotel Sydney on June 6th and 7th. So, Tim, where are we at the moment?
Do you know, we're just at that point where I think we're going to all start losing sleep over it.
G'day.
We're probably not at that point where... I seem to remember last year you, in the days that that kind of dawned towards you appearing on stage, I remember you getting increasingly stressed before you presented the...
Yeah, that was the creative agency review book, yeah.
But yeah, we're kind of at the moment, there are 50 slots to fill. And we're starting to fill those presentations. So, 2-day conference, 4 streams going on for much of that time, loads of interesting things. We're in a pretty good state so far. We did the call out to the industry, inviting people to curate sessions. We've had some brilliant suggestions.
What are the best ones?
Well, most of them we haven't announced yet. There's some really exciting ones. So an early announcement was looking at the relationship between Twitter and journalism, which is a sort of almost a follow-up to the session we had last year on Twitter and television. So a similar panel. So Magdalena Rose, who's now with Ten's Breakfast, joins us for that one. Stephen Brook, who edits the media section of The Australian, is in that one. Also, Andrew, the first Dog on the Moon cartoonist for Crikey, will be with us too. And have I forgotten somebody else? Is there one more person for that panel?
Well, it was curated by Kim Druitt.
It's curated by Kim Druitt from Act Factor, and I apologise if I have forgotten one of the people for that panel. We've also said that we'll be looking at, if you could change one thing about the media, what would it be? And actually try and come up with a tangible approach that means that at the end of it, there's a tangible result. We'll actually, rather than agreeing what we want to change, there'll be an agreement from all those people in the room on this is how we're going to actually tackle something and make it happen.
That's Chris Stevenson.
Chris Stevenson from PhD is curating that one.
How did
friend of the Mumbrella cast?
Indeed. How did the manifesto turn out in a tangible sense?
Yeah. So last year was the Media Manifesto, which effectively there were sort of 7 or 8 streams, each one sort of tackling a different issue, whether it was clients and remuneration or training or, you know, or trading, you know, various different aspects. And basically in real time they created a manifesto for the industry on We Believe and various kind of lists of beliefs. So the tangible thing that came out at the end was the manifesto with the kind of statement, okay, let's not just leave it for a year and then come back to it. Now it has been out there and it's generated some conversations, but I'm not sure we could point to any single thing and say it's changed something, which I think is why this year the approach is very much let's pick the one thing we can change and change it.
But the deadline has now passed. It's not as if people can still submit ideas.
Yeah, deadline
ideas
for curated sessions. And if someone got an amazing idea, then I'm sure we'd still look at it.
Yeah.
But we've had so many in that unfortunately, you know, most of the great ideas we've had in, we're not going to be able to use.
Yeah.
You know, we're in a very fortunate position. And of course, you know, it'd be massively lazy if we just let the industry curate every single session. We have to do some ourselves as well.
Yeah.
So probably about half of them will be industry curated sessions and half will be more sort of hands-on.
Yeah. If there is a formula for a great idea for a curated session, what would you say that is?
Do you know, I think it's the ones where it's a really interesting topic and a slight twist is picked on how you address it. So it's not just 3 people taking it in turns to do 15 minutes of PowerPoint followed by questions from the audience, which often at a lot of conferences seems to be the problem. You know, so you do get the feeling that some conferences think they've done their job once they've got all of the speakers confirmed, rather than actually making sure that the session itself is interesting.
Yeah. Kathy, you moderated a session last year. How was that?
Well, it was a humdinger, I think. it was a session called Telling Lies to Idiots. So on the panel were Max Markson,
publicist,
Andrew Verasny from Banjo, Peter Biggs from Clem's Melbourne.
And Peter, obviously a former trainee priest, so he brought an ethics session quite an interesting aspect of it.
Priest turned ad man, yeah, and Joe Talcott, who kind of represented the white corner.
Yeah, that's the thing, because he should represent evil, shouldn't he? Representing advertisers and marketers, yet he's everybody's favourite person.
Mm. And so we looked at a series of hypothetical moral dilemmas and the panel responded to them, and it was quite a, I think, at times controversial session.
And Robin, you adore public speaking.
Love it.
This year, last time you were presenting back research on the creative agencies. This time?
Exactly the same formula, but for media agencies. So we're doing a book called The Media Agency Review. And so we'll be revealing the results on what the industry and also an expert panel thinks of Australia's top 18 agencies across a range of criteria, which will be thrilling to watch.
Can we expect an
full house, Colin?
Yeah.
Punch-ups, maybe?
Possibly, yeah.
Can we expect Robin just peeking off his head until with nerves. Or,
yeah, running off the stage in tears. Yes.
I only knew you for about 3 weeks, and it was possibly the most interesting 3 weeks of getting to know
Going
someone.
Up the river, Kurt style.
I'll tell you, when I stood at the back watching on stage, though, I felt like a proud father. Next, ACP relaunches PC User. ACP has announced it will change the name of PC User to Tech Life. The relaunch will kick in from June. Now, Robin, you wrote this one. Tell us about the twists and turns on this one. Because at first, we actually thought, quite excitingly, a new magazine was being launched. Yeah. That was what the press release suggested.
Yeah, initially, we thought it's a new magazine, but it appears that, obviously, PC User is being rebranded to Tech Life, presumably to broaden its advertiser base. PC Users, I guess, as a name, is a little bit geeky, a little bit sort of vertical. Tech Life is broader, so the thinking being, I'd imagine that it can appeal to a greater number of advertisers. In the press release, it actually reads, Tech Life will cover a broader spectrum than PC User, offering editorial on the application of technology to all consumer lifestyle activities, from fitness to entertainment. But yeah, what struck us also as odd was that in February we wrote a story about that asked ACP if PC User would close, would actually heard that it would close. And we were told in no uncertain terms that the magazine was not in any danger.
And that was because their audit numbers were pretty disappointing at the time.
Yeah.
What about the name itself, Tech Life? It's not completely new, is it?
No, it's not. In fact, SBS runs a blog called Tech Life. Also, there's another blogger called Trevor Long who runs the blog called Your Tech Life.
And a podcast. He does a podcast as well with the same name.
He does, too. Yeah, he does a podcast as well. Now, the thing is that the reason that ACP has been able to get away with it is because the name is not a registered trademark in Australia for a publisher, so pretty much anyone can use it. But obviously the issue is it causes a lot of confusion, presumably to readers. And potentially to advertisers. So that's why it's been an issue. We've run a story just recently, a follow-up story on this, that obviously Trevor Long and SBS accuse ACP of stealing their name.
Next, 21 Jump Street and Deadbeat Dads.
This week at the box office, a remake of 21 Jump Street took the top spot. Colin, how did it do in a bit more detail?
Yeah, well, clearly it took the top spot. It took $4 million at the box office, which is a pretty impressive haul, considering Disney blockbuster John Carter last week took $3 million.
Isn't John Carter terrible, apparently?
It is supposedly terrible, and I'd like to get onto that in just a second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's quite all right. I appreciate your interest.
But still with Jump Street, massively good PR campaign. They rolled out the stars, Jonah What's-His-Face and the other one, didn't they? Who did it?
It was a massively effective Jonah What's-His-Face and the other one.
They did the rounds of the TV and the radio stations very effectively, so there was an awful lot of anticipation for it.
Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum, correct. And the film took across 300 screens, which is a very wide opening, took $13,568 per screen.
Did you work that out yourself, Colin?
Fortunately, I didn't have to, but it is just a simple division. Nevertheless.
So if I was to give you something else like that, would you be able to do it in your head?
No, I'm not Adam Spencer. I'm not good with funny math. Whereas John Carter, yes, took $3 million. However, and this is what I was going to get onto with John Carter, it has come out in the last week. It also opened last week in the US. Disney has prepped investors for a $200 million operating loss from the film. So,
what is John Carter actually about?
From what I gather...
Dinosaurs.
From what I gather, it's a guy who...
So it's unrelated to John Carter, the character in ER, presumably.
Yes. Was that Anthony Edwards?
No, that was Noah something.
Oh,
Noah Wyle, is it?
Wyle, yeah, right. So not about Noah Wyle or Clooney or Anthony Edwards. No one from... So what happens is, I believe he's...
not dinosaurs and not ER.
No, not even Juliana Margulies.
So what is it? So
it's... It's about a guy in the 1950s, regular John, who something happens to him and he wakes up on Mars. And it turns out that there are actually not just microorganisms, but macroorganisms, giant sort of dinosaur-y, wildebeest thing, Martians, yes, on Mars. And he has to fight them. And he does it with a fairly bare chest.
Sounds saucy.
Yeah. Locally, MTV's Optus 180 project announced its winner, Deadbeat Dad. So if you're unfamiliar with the Optus 180 project, it's been running for 6 years. Basically, the competition is to make a 3-minute or 180-second trailer for a project that you would like to see extended. And Optus fronts up the cash of $180,000 to make that one-hour pilot. And MTV broadcasts it. And the clip that won this time was Deadbeat Dads, a drama directed by Ben Matthews, co-written and co-produced by Kent Pearson and Shelley McLaren, about three dysfunctional fathers with, you know, a child each, to the one mother. When the one mother passes away, they all get joint custody and have to live in the one house. So let's take a listen.
So I understand that the kids don't really know you. Spent most of their time with their mum, even towards the end. I'm not sure why she took so long to tell you guys, but it sounds like she had a bit of trouble deciding which dad the kids should go to. I can only imagine it was a tough choice. She wants to keep the kids together, out of foster care. She needed someone who is responsible, in a decent financial situation, someone who is good at communicating with troubled teens. Ready to do whatever it takes to keep these kids on track. Out of trouble. Alive. I don't think she thought any of you totally fit the bill. So she put all three names down. Joint custody. And they stay together. Kev. Liv is a gorgeous, headstrong young woman. She needs stability. Dave, your son is becoming a man. He needs a role model. Simo, Rosie is an adorable little girl who needs her daddy. I can't see how three different fathers can live in the same house without much trouble, but she thought that maybe you could still change.
As comments in the Mumbrella stream was saying, you know, could be done very nicely, like The Slap turned into a good series. And it was really highly produced for just a 3-minute trailer. It looked really nice.
It did. And we think that one of the guys involved actually works at GPYNR, one of the ad agencies as well.
Yeah, that's right. Kent Pearson.
Next, Whipper fails my job interview.
There's more to radio than music through your headphones.
Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves.
Check out the case study for Nissan Micra Citizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city.
Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done.
See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
Now, to finish up with today, we'll be a little bit self-indulgent. Nova's Sydney breakfast hosts Fitzy and Whipper have a segment called Work Pranks, where Fitzy sends Whipper into a job interview wearing an earpiece, which Fitzy then feeds Whipper stupid and incriminating lines to say. I'm a big fan of the segment. So I had a chat to some of the behind-the-scenes team, and Whipper came in for an intern interview with Robin. Let's take a listen.
Now it's work prank time. Whipper went for a job this week as a journalist at an online newspaper called Mumbrella. Now the editor there, Timmy Burrows, we know Timmy pretty well, and Timmy said he's been asking us for a while, can you stitch up someone? I've got to get you someone a beauty here.
He said this is going to be perfect. Robin was the target, Fitzy, and Robin hasn't been in the country for that long, so he knew he had a sitting duck.
So he knows a little bit about the media here, but he didn't know much about us, which was awesome. He didn't recognise Whip Australia straight away. Robin is a massive greenie as well, okay? He cycles everywhere. He doesn't drive drive. So we stitched him up a little bit there, but Whipper went in as a journalist. The best thing about this, because we were part of an online newspaper, Robin took Whipper up to the video
studio.
The video studio, and had a video camera set up there as if just to show Whipper what it was like. Mm-hmm. He didn't know, Robin, that it was videotaping the whole time. It's going to be up on our website, novafm.com.au, but here it is.
You've written some stuff before.
Yes, published. Take 5 magazine.
Yeah, Take 5 magazine. Yes,
I wrote about my addiction to food.
I wrote about my addiction to food.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a bad emotional eater.
I'm a bad emotional eater.
You know, right, I miss a bus and I'll go and eat four Zinger burgers.
I miss a bus and I'll go and eat four Zinger burgers.
Right.
I did some work for the Big Issue.
I did some work for the Big Issue as well.
We're just handing them out, not writing.
What did you write about for them?
What did I write? Oh, no, nah, just handing them out, not writing.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But still, it's being involved in it.
I wrote a big piece on Lottie Takiri.
I wrote a big piece on Lottie Takiri.
No, the rugby player?
Yes.
The rugby player?
Yes.
Yeah, he was spotted ordering a latte in Drummoyne.
He was spotted ordering a latte.
In Drummoyne. So I wrote a piece
on
that.
So, Robin, you carried yourself off very well, I have to say. You It's rare to have that sort of prank called and come off with some dignity, but the real question is, have you forgiven me?
Well, not quite. I shall have my revenge. I mean, it's so agonising. I think, you know, I find it very difficult, painful to even watch it.
Now watched it, though?
Yes, I have.
You refused for about 24 hours,
Yeah, I was
didn't
just
you?
Squirming. I was just like, oh, my God, I've got really... really camp body language. I was sitting in this chair with my sort of legs crossed, sort of like looking very...
Of all the stuff to come out of that.
That was the one thing that hadn't occurred to me.
Yeah, that's what strikes me. God, I'm camp. But also, I just, for the duration of that interview, in inverted commas, I just thought, this is a madman. Tim sold me a kipper, but in another way, as in you interviewed...
He sold you a whipper.
He did indeed. And, I just have to sort of manage this madman out of the building as soon as I can, but obviously I just have to sort of keep it running.
As opposed to a bodybuilder who forcibly took Whipper out of the building... You played very much the pacifist.
Oh, no, it wasn't a bodybuilder. It was a gym. It was at a gym, yeah. So he had an interview to be a gym instructor, but, you know, sort of a... He was sort of asked, you know, so what would you, you know, say you have one of your clients and she lost 10 kilograms, what would you say? And he was then told to the earpiece, say, lose another 20.
Tim,
so on.
How do you feel, you were the one that put Robin up to this, how do you feel about Whipper referring to Mumbrella as a stepping stone and just playing the role of a shit kicker until he gets to the Times?
Well, it's the New York Times. I that's fine. Anyone... is welcome to leave so long as the next job is at the New York Times. And it's also worth mentioning we do actually have a vacancy for an intern at the moment, so you know the whole thing isn't a complete waste of time. So if you want a job interview with Robin, then just get in touch.
I haven't received any emails quite yet, though. Just a footnote, but I shall await your application.
That is all we have time for today. Thank you very much to Robin.
Thank you.
To Kathy.
Thank you kindly.
And to Colin.
Thank you.
The Mumbrella theme tune was created by Noise International. See you next week. Toodle pip.
Rugby player ordering a latte.
What's exciting?
Oh, I just spotted.
Well, no, what was the hook?
Why
would people read that?
Why would they read it?
He's a big rugby player.
He's a big rugby player.
He's a good-looking bloke.
Can't they drink lattes?
Good-looking bloke.
Yeah. Not many people know he drinks latte.
Not many people know he drinks lattes, you know? So that was kind of the...
He blew on it first, too. He didn't drink it straight away.
Let it cool down, did he?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if many people sort of knew that.